Yeah, going to get your tires changed like early in the morning is not like you're sitting around with a coffee, nursing a coffee, waiting for them to finish, right? Like you can't leave.
You know what?
The premises.
I was gonna bring a book, and I was thinking I might also even tell them I would be like, it's very early in the morning, right? I'm gonna be there for an hour and a half, and I'll have a book with me. So I was just gonna tell them like, look, I might fall asleep in the chair. Like, don't worry about it. Just like, nudge me when the tires are ready and I will be all there, but just don't be concerned. And I don't think anyone else will be bothered by it. I just feel like I should let you know that if I'm going to be sitting here reading a book, I'm bound to drift off.
Yeah.
So just,
yeah. Especially waking up early. I mean, as long as you're not getting your tires changed in a bar type establishment, you're probably okay. That's the one place they don't like you sleeping. I've recall witnessing on a couple of occasions. Not a big fan.
I don't think people really like you sleeping
almost
like
anywhere.
Anywhere.
Yeah. Other
like
than like,
if you,
yeah,
like if an auto shop. If you fall asleep like against a tree, I'm pretty sure someone eventually would be like, hey, get up. I'm like, you know?
Yeah.
I'm at my least troublesome to society when I'm fast asleep. Like people should want me asleep all the time.
Well, that's supposedly been the whole project for this whole time, trying to lull us into a deep kind of psychic slumber. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's right. A little bit much when they're just like, hey, don't nap here. It's like, hey, you want my whole life to be a nap. What's going on? This is ideal for you. You're exactly right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Let's get started. On a world spinning its way to damnation amidst the fear and despair of a broken human race, who's left to fight for what's good and pure? Handkerchief Dynasty. I'm, as always, your secret professor, joined by my good friend, appearing bi-weekly at City Ford on the St. Albert Trail, the High Priest of Oilers Magic. How are you, High Priest?
I'm okay.
Bit of tumult, okay. Bit of tumult, pre-Christmas tumult.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's a lot of, there's a lot to process right now. A lot to process.
You know, I think first off, we have to say this is the first time we recorded since the Oilers broke that losing streak with two solid wins. One against, you know, depleted Kraken team, but we played great in that game. We were depleted as fuck too.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder at this point, because that 6-game losing streak was getting pretty dark. And in a weird way, a lot of people came, not for you and me, but a lot of people came out of the woodwork and there was some pretty heavy shit being said and going down.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And yes. It really makes me wonder, like, what I just wanted to ask you a simple question. You are the High Priest of Oilers Magic. You're well schooled in these subjects. What is an Oilers fan? Just let's define it.
I don't know. I mean, I can't. I'm very extremely reactionary. I find.
No, but like speaking on the level of like the platonic ideal rather than the experiential world, though. Like, I don't want you to tell me what the Oilers fans are like. I want to tell me as a concept, what does it mean to be an Oilers fan? What is that? What kind of activity does that entail? You know, what accoutrement accompanies such identifier?
Okay. Pepsi and Doritos. Like, I don't know if I get the feeling that a lot of people aren't how they're choosing to be a fan. It's like, I don't know why you do that. Like, I picture a lot of these people just kind of like tensed up, like, no, Lord, no, don't make it so. Like, why would you do that? Like, get yourself
like Gil from Simpsons.
Yeah. Anyway. I don't really know how to answer that question other than really reactionary. That's a word that I would like use to describe what I saw during the six game skid, where people just like flew off the handle, like willing to basically blow this thing up entirely to get out of a 6-game skid. And I mean, like, who cares? Like, six, now what are we again? Like 18 and 11, like everyone's.
Well, like one thing that comes out of the woodwork a lot is people can inevitably pull in the like years and years of failure that preceded it. But it's like, dude, yeah, like, you know, when Julius Caesar was invading Britain, do you think like he wanted to hang out with people who are just like, look, man, like we fucked it up against Carthage. You know, we've had a lot of failures here. We can't do this. We suck. Like, let's blow this up. Let's get a new Caesar, you know, do the legions a different way. Like they never would have dominated and subjugated the peoples of Great Britain with that attitude, High Priest.
Yeah,
you know that is better than anyone.
Well, I'll tell you something, man. I'm not one for like living in the past. To me, like I'm of the mind that like there is no past. Exactly. It's just the way I operate.
No, exactly, right? Exactly.
There is no past. So, to me, like when people complain about what's gone on, like quoting the Oilers playoff record over the last little bit, or like bringing up the decade of darkness, or like you heard callbacks during, I mean, this six game skid was pretty remarkable. Like what went on? I had to get out. I had to leave Twitter.
You did.
Haven't been back.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, you'd hear callbacks to like McTavish, mm-hmm. like full on decade of darkness stuff, like right back into the lore.
It's like the ancient history. Like we're talking about professional sports, like the, but it's only the now. There's like fewer things that the now is more present in than professional sports.
I know.
Playing a game, right? It's linear. It's like the pilot of Deep Space Nine when he has to explain how linear time works to the wormhole aliens. It's like one of those things. It's just it's a state of being. You know, and like, yeah, it sucked that we had to go through thick and thin, but part of being a fan, I'm just going to put it out there. Part of being a fan of a sports team is cheering for that team to win and sticking with them through thick and thin a little bit. You don't have to blindly follow them. Like you were trained in some kind of madrasa, but like you need to, like, if they go on a six game skid, you're like, you know, this sucks. Like feel bad for them. For one thing, they're the motherfuckers going out in there and losing the games and having to like hang their hat on it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is why it's so refreshing. Just see us come up with a couple of big wins going into this little weird quasi apocalyptic, you know, Hollywood disaster movie break or whatever the fuck.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. It's just, I do feel like there's a segment of people that want, that's for them, it's about analysis and prediction.
Yes.
You know, it's almost like they're like Robert De Niro in Casino, right? They're just like the expert sports better, but not a sports fan. For them, they know what the quarterback had for lunch and if his fiance is mad at him or whatever.
Right.
But like he's only following it for the numbers to make money. And there's people who follow hockey and I assume other sports as well, who are just interested in having their theories proven correct. And that's the game they're playing. I mean, it's weird. But like that, it's a thing, you know, they want to be right. They want to be right. And like, you know, we have Aaron Sorkin to blame for that, man. It's as simple as that.
What did you think about, like, now take me back. Like the first game was the Columbus game, right? That's who we beat first. And we always, Columbus to me is, it's a strange team because I feel as though they are like the decade of darkness Oilers. Mm-hmm. Like it's like whenever we play Columbus, it's the only time I can really like put myself in the shoes of the opposition during the decade of darkness. Like when those teams would play the Oilers, it's almost like you're playing a team that's like not a real NHL team. Like they've just sucked forever. Like Columbus has sucked this entire time.
It's weird.
Like they're frustrated. Like players want to get out of there. They're like the decade of darkness Oilers. So
yeah,
we completely destroyed those guys. What was the score in that game?
5-2.
5-2. Right. And that's the one where like Fogel got an empty netter that game.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the game everyone got off the schneid.
I was calling for Fogel to play on the top line, except I was saying put him up there with Yamamoto and Connor. But yeah. I was right. Okay. I was proven right regardless. That's the most important thing.
What's going on with like Yamamoto?
Yamamoto is like his career lies on like the edge of a knife. It's basically like he's right on like the cusp / precipice / like liminal threshold space between a really effective player that gets credit and puts up points and a player that does all of that almost like right to the point of getting a point and then they just don't get the points. Because he's contributing to the team succeeding, but he's got like no fucking points. It's just weird. It's like a paradox. He's an enigma. I love him. But, you know, I mean, it's interesting, you know, like we're looking for a top six forward right now. And to be honest, like Fogel looks like he's auditioning pretty well for a top six hit. And I don't know, like people say Yamamoto can't be a third line player, but like the enigma, wherever he is, that enigma will like continue, you know, yes. of like an incredibly
absolutely
like, engaged, physical, hard-nosed yeah. player who's also incredibly tiny and just basically like squeaks through like under people's arms and shit. Like it's like it's like he's a different level of hockey player. I want to see him stick around. I don't know what's going to happen, but you know, we'll yeah. see. We'll see where the forward depth looks in like a month.
Well, it would absolutely bum me out to see him playing somewhere else. I'd be like, oh, like oh, that looks like so much fun. It's so awesome. You guys have that guy. Damn.
It would
like,
be a tough guy to give away.
That's what yeah. I think every time I saw him.
When we could get him for dirt cheap right now. I mean, fuck, sign him for like 2 or 3 years at like $2 million. And he like, that's great for a guy who has like, what, like 6 points or something. But he's probably drawn, you know, like 10 penalties as well. So like, that's, you know, drawn penalties is not something that shows up on the stat line. It's not even a thing. We don't even talk about it really that much, but like, it's kind of crazy that that's not tracked and talked about like in terms of something that significantly can alter the outcome of a game,
especially with this team, right? Especially with the Oilers.
Yeah, man, exactly. Yeah. So we'll see about Yamamoto. But
and then that was also Skinner's first game back, right?
Yeah, he played both though, right?
Yeah. So where are you at with a friend of mine said he wants Tippett or whoever. We haven't even got to that yet.
No, it's true.
He wants the coaching staff to just like let Skinner have like 6 games in a row. Obviously, that's not going to happen now. But like sort of let him run with it for a little bit just to see what happens. Just to see what happens. We're in a position. And I don't know. I think that's kind of a good idea. Not sure. That I think Miko's playing poorly or anything. I would just like to see kind of what would happen. We're like 7 games above 500, right? Just like let Skinner get the next like 5 games just to see what happens.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's fine. We've got time to do that. There's runway before the trade kind of season picks up pace.
Because I'm still not convinced, like,
there's not a lot of good goaltending options out there on the market right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he could be. He's played well, but he's still a young guy. Now's the time to test him out, see how he holds up,
and
make sure you're not kind of putting too much on him. But you know, maybe Mike Smith comes back. Like Mike Smith has turned into like the fairy godmother of the tale. It's like I kind of just like half forget about Mike Smith, and yet at the same time he could come in at any point like this deus ex machina fairy godmother and like turn a pumpkin into, you know, a fucking like a killer like 5v5 team, you know.
Well, it's funny because like right before they played Toronto, I'd say like Mike Smith return mania was like kind of peaking at that point, and then
volatile like, mania. Oh, it's a very volatile mania.
He's not going to play against Toronto, but that means he'll probably play the next game. And then he didn't, and then he didn't play Seattle. And now I think, like you said, like it's like a celestial happening. We're like Mike Smith is coming, and then at last,
well, he looks more. He's the most Christ-like figure on the team. I mean, when you look at him, you know. He's got a little bit of the Jesus look with the hair and everything too, you know?
Yeah.
It's just weird because it's like, what's up with the injury? And like,
what
not
is
knowing
the injury?
It, but not knowing anything about it. Nobody said what it is. It could be like a sports hernia. That would be like my guess, but like, who knows? Like the doctors don't know. Apparently like this team worth $1.1 billion can't figure it out. No, I'm sure they're just not saying, cause it's proprietary information. I'm sure that's why.
But how come usually we know? I mean, usually we know what the injury is at some point, right? Like even when he came back from the last injury, we didn't really know what that injury was.
They've kind of stopped talking about the injuries in as much detail as they used to. It's upper body, lower body injury. Did you see the press conference where like someone asked Duncan Keith about his injury? It's just like, oh, can you tell us about the play where he got injured and that injury? And Duncan Keith was just like, nope. It's like, nope, no need to talk about that. I mean, We'll see. The goaltending situation is like a really interesting kind of like plot arc in this season. Like if this was a season of TV, the question of like, oh, goalie. Oh, we saw Ken Holland was like having like sushi with like fucking Nikolai Habibulin or whatever. Whoever the fuck, who knows? But I just think the team does not play as confidently in front of Koskinen as any other goaltender right now. If there's option besides Koskinen, the team kind of like is plays kind of like scared with him. And why wouldn't you? I don't blame them. I'd feel the exact same way. It could just be.
Do you remember that game where I think it was like 4-2 against the Jets or something like that? And Mikko got pulled between periods. Do you remember that game?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
That moment. I have like left an impression like Mikko, because it's not like they were getting like the doors blown off him, and it's not like Mikko was having like a super shitty game. Like he kind of, I think he let in the first goal and then like let in a softie, but Tippett let him play, right?
Sure.
And then it was between like, and it was a game going on, like they had four, the Oilers were down by two, the Oilers had also scored. And then it was like between periods, Tippett was just like
put in Skinner. Well, this is the thing though. It's this kind of a similar thing with Yamamoto, except it's at the goaltending position, which is it's just horrific and not what you want. He's a paradoxical player. He's right on the edge at the cusp of being a solid NHL guy. But every once in a while, one of those goals go in and you're like, what the fuck? And but like it's not as though it's all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not as though it's never. It's like right on the cusp of like the threshold of your perception where you're like, okay, it's always constantly there, possibly on the horizon, but it'll only show up like 50-50. It's like you can't have a goaltender who's a paradox. You know what I mean? They can be an enigma, but they can't be a paradox. They can be mysterious and all that shit. But if they're paradoxical goaltending is not something that's healthy for any room, you know?
And you know what? It's not sustainable. It almost is. It almost is. That's the paradox.
It's like playing with the laws of physics. It's like that movie Event Horizon. Like you think you can like toy with like the laws of physics and like, you know, the demons aren't going to come get you.
All that being said, when the Oilers start playing again, whenever that is, who do you...
Calgary on the 27th.
Best case scenario on the 27th. Best case scenario. Who do you start that game?
Skinner. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a long break.
You have all three guys
back. Oh, if Mike Smith is back, Mike Smith, for sure. Really? For the Calgary game? Yeah, you need that emotional lead. You need the gray beard there. He'll probably end up like fighting their goalie or some crazy shit, you know, like 2 minutes into the game. Someone will take some liberties and there'll be like a huge scrum and like everyone will lose their fucking minds. But Calgary's, they're going to be possibly still depleted by, I don't know. I don't know how long the protocols are going. It's a fluid situation that might change the rules, but that it's weird that right after the break, we're going to be playing Calgary. That's kind of like a marquee like game to start after the pause with, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, how many more times is that? That's the second time we've played Calgary, right? We beat them in the first game.
Yeah.
And how many more times do we play them after that? A couple more times, probably.
At least, yeah.
Yeah,
one more time or something like that. Yeah, might only be one more time after that.
Should we be expecting Mike Smith in that game? The way they've been talking about Mike Smith's return timetable, should we be expecting Mike Smith to play?
No, you can't, because as the fairy godmother figure. He's off and no one can contact, you know, nobody knows when they're going to come back. It's like, oh, we have this fairy godmother who'll take care of everything, but no one's heard from them for like 6 months. She went to the store to buy tea and then mysteriously disappeared, possibly on a quest for some like sacred amulet, possibly kidnapped by ruffians. We have no idea. And then when he appears at the end of the season, all will be right, potentially. But if he's not back by the trade deadline, like trade for a fucking goalie, man. Come on. Like, there's no choice here.
I think you're right. What do you think about... Now, there was a lot of talk, like, before, during the losing streak, when we were eating bad streak.
Yeah.
I'd say, like, fire Tippett, that movement was, like, as hot as it's ever been, right?
I guess,
And weirdly, I mean, I thought it was ridiculous the whole time, as did you, I think.
Oops, yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Jim. As did you. And then, weirdly, we did get to see the team
under different leadership,
not being coached by Dave Tippett. Not only that, by a former head coach.
Well, this is the thing, though. Glenn Gullitson, yeah,
did,
and then Jim Fletcher. I mean,
what did you think about that?
Being like an associate coach, being like an associate coach on an NHL team, dude. It's like you basically like the guy who like grabs the pucks, basically. Like compared to the amount of power the head coach of the team has.
No, you're the player's coach. You're like the kind of like the buffer, right?
You're like the good cop.
Yeah. You're the good cop, exactly. Yeah.
And like, I think we have really good assistant coaches. I think Jim Playfair has done a really good job with all the defensemen, for example. Glenn Gullitson, obviously, you can't complain about the power play too much. But no. Like, it's weird. It's got to be weird for them to jump from being like an assistant or associate to like interim.
Well, Gullitson was a head coach at Calgary.
No, he was. He was. Yeah.
And I thought he was a pretty good coach, to tell you the truth. I'm surprised that he never was a head coach again after that.
Yeah.
Because they got rid of him to bring in the Klansman, Bill Peters. That's who replaced Gullitson. And it was like, I thought that he...
Jesus Christ. That's like horrible,
I thought that Gullitson at the time, like the Flames had a pretty shitty team.
Yeah.
Right then. And he like kind of got them. They might have even made it to the playoffs one year or something like that. But anyway, I'm surprised he never coached again. Did you find the deployment of the lines any different during
Well,
those
yeah,
two
actually,
games?
I'm glad you brought it up because I did want to mention, like, it was obvious to me. I mean, in the second game, just based on necessity and, like, having a bunch of guys called up. I mean, they did have a couple of forwards that played, like, 6 minutes in the second game. But they were clearly, excuse me, and quite rightly, I think, rolling the lines. And this is the thing, man. Like, you got to have a third line that's playing enough to be engaged in the game. It's like a third line that isn't properly engaged in the game doesn't get enough minutes. It's like you're the third wheel in a really toxic polyamorous relationship. And you're like, okay, we're all engaged to get triple married. But, you know, I only get to see you like, you know, like once every 2 weeks. And like, you don't really seem full. You're just on your phone the whole time. And then these like the two Chads or whatever who play on the top lines, like roll in. It's like, you feel like emasculated and inferior. It's like a really, it's like, you can't get engaged that way, man. You gotta be, you gotta give those guys gotta get minutes. They have to feel as though the game is on their shoulders.
So
you know
true.
What I mean? Yeah, they need to feel as though the game is, they can't just sit back while they triple shift the top guns. And we hope that they pull off the heroics because we know they can do it. It's like, that's not the ideal scenario. The ideal scenario is Connor Leon play, you know, like 20 plus minutes a game. I mean, they both played a lot in the second game just out of necessity because they were like triple shifting them with the other two guys playing 6 minutes.
Yeah.
But, you know, we need, and especially like with a player like Fogel, like, you know, people are saying, oh, we brought him in to beef up that third line. But it's like, yeah, like he could potentially be an answer on that top line with Connor, I think, based on his play of these two games. Like, I think he deserves an audition. And there's no reason to not mix it up to the point where, you know, like fucking Tyler Benson got like 16 minutes or whatever in the game against Seattle.
What and about that guy?
He played pretty well.
Seth Griffith.
Guy? Yeah. Yeah.
Who
yeah.
essentially caused like the second goal or whichever goal that was when he was like going after it behind the net.
Mm, yeah.
Man, I was pretty impressed by our younger guys that game, to tell you the truth.
Well, it felt like a preseason game where like young guys are auditioning and trying to show off. They're trying to get jobs, so they're playing with like a lot of grit, a lot of heart, you know?
Yeah, remember during the preseason when we had all of our young guys and like how good our preseason team was?
Totally, yeah. Yeah, I remember the games like Bouchard played where he was just like the best player on both sides by like a mile. Yeah. Bouchard's kind of wavered a little bit. He's still learning the game defensively.
Yeah, it's a young defenseman, yeah.
Yeah. You know who I thought had a great game last game was Barry, too. But of course, you can't say that. That's sacrilege. Yeah. Yeah.
He did have a great game. Yeah. I was pretty impressed. I was pretty impressed. I thought overall that the team handled that skid really well. You know what I mean? Like they kind of, everyone was saying the right things. Like you were hearing the right things about what was going on in the room. Yeah. And, you know, like, I never honestly, you mentioned the D word once.
It's true. It did come up. Oh, we came pretty close to the Bad Teenage Poetry, man. We were right on the precipice, but it's no, okay, because we won the last two.
There's no way. There's no way. I mean, I honestly wasn't. And I don't know if that's just like a change in me or if it was a, I tend to believe it was just like a, kind of like a natural reaction to this team. Like, I think this is a really good team. Like, this isn't, the wheels aren't going to fall off this thing, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, people have started to temper their like playoff expectations. It's funny because everyone like a month ago was just like, the Oilers are definitely a playoff team. But like now, well, you know, we're sitting in the wild card spot, but like, we're going to go on a roll here. We're going to get going again. I'm not too worried.
They're a playoff team.
I did want to ask you, pretty interesting press conference in the last few days here. Mr. Paul Maurice resigns as head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. Did you watch that press conference, right?
Yeah.
That was a surreal experience.
Yeah, absolutely it was. Well,
yeah.
What did you think about it? What do you think about Paul Maurice as a guy?
I mean, the whole idea of him saying like, look, I was a combination of losing some passion because of like all the bullshit and like the like difficulties around playing the game right now, but also feeling like he knew he wasn't the answer anymore. And that if he kept on coaching the team, he'd just be collecting a paycheck is what he said. It was just like, dude, like that's like so like base. Like he's just like, you know what, man? Like, yeah, I could stay here or whatever, but I'm not the guy. So love you all. Love Winnipeg. You know, came here on like a 4-month contract and ended up living there for like 8 years or whatever.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy because like it oozed like character. I'm just like questioning like whether like I can believe the like that that's what was going on, but like it seemed sincere to me.
Well, know? Paul Maurice is to me one of the most impressive people in hockey. Like if you watch. I remember when the Oilers played the Jets and they would talk to him before the game, like right before, like ice level. And he was so like just so pro, like so well-spoken, like just so incredibly on top of shit. You know what I mean?
Steady.
Well, just like really engaged and like really sort of just completely impressive.
Yeah.
So like when he resigned, it was kind of like I was very impressed by it, but also like not even really surprised. Like I can't imagine it was like I couldn't imagine him leaving a team for any other reason except that reason. You know, like I can't imagine him quitting or being fired.
Yeah.
The only way I could imagine Paul Maurice leaving a team at this point is in his career is if he's like, I'm just leaving. I'm just like, my work here is done.
Yeah. My work here is
so
done.
So crazy.
Need a new voice. It's interesting.
Who does that though?
I know. Like it's never, it's just not done. It was just like, that's why it was such a shocker. You're like watching.
It's
and
not
it's just
done.
Like,
yeah.
Cause like you, NHL coaches like hold on to that ring, like fucking like death itself, you know, like, well, they cling to it. They like, they make sweet love to their goaltenders, whispering sweet nothings into their ear being like, you have to save my job. 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 They're trading away fucking first and second round picks for like peanuts, for fucking pennies on the dollar. They're wheeling and dealing, you know, like Pistol Pete Chiarelli at the very end. Yeah. Like fucking Mussolini in his own bunker, you know, like not even Hitler in his bunker, but like the like other fascist who's like a schmuck. No, I'm not calling Peter Chiarelli a fascist. I will not go that far. It's satire. It's Handkerchief Dynasty. It's a joke. He did build a hell of a hockey ops department, though. It's interesting, though. It's funny how the Paul Maurice thing happened right around the time the Fire Tippett stuff was like reaching a high crescendo. You know, because it was like, oh, well, like I want Paul Maurice now, or oh, like Tippett should resign. It's like as if like NHL coaches don't just resign.
It was almost as though like Paul Maurice sacrificed himself so Dave Tippett could live. Because I feel like once Paul Maurice resigned, that was sort of like the tipping point. And then like it was as though at that moment, Tippett's job became much more secure somehow. Like everyone was just kind of like, okay. And then, because the fire tippet talk has now completely died down, of course. Because
absence makes the heart grow fonder, I guess. Because we just got like a taste of like, oh, I mean, people are just, they just want to chase that like 15 game like honeymoon. It's so weird, man. Like, yeah, it's great. And like, yeah, maybe we have like a better coach coming next year, but like, we'll see. There's no guarantee Tippett's back next year. Just like, wait a second, you know?
Tippett has like an amazing coaching record. Like, I don't know. I'm in no rush to see that guy leave, quite frankly.
That's fair. I did want to ask you, though, apropos of that same conversation, there was one wild rumor out there, totally unsubstantiated. I think it's probably bullshit, but yeah. I feel like we have to address it because it's, for me, I think it would be catastrophic if it happened. Mike Babcock potentially coming to the Oilers. Yeah. I mean, like, as even an option, to me, it just reeks of the exact wrong way to go with, like, the head coach position. Because even though he's a good NHL coach, he's got rings, you know, he's got the resume, but like hiring Mike Babcock is like, okay, well, we want to win and we kind of don't care the ultimate cost, and that's a bridge too far for me.
Well, Mike Babcock is like on record as a piece of shit. Through I remember throughout that story there was like something that stood out to me was how Mike Babcock was also a piece of shit to like people that worked at the stadium.
Yeah, like, you know, janitors, I mean? And stuff. Yeah.
Like, it would be some guy like doing his job, and Mike Babcock would be like, "Hey, you stupid piece of shit! Like, what are you about?" And like,
and then like fucking Johan Franzen waking up from nightmares.
I know.
Like, years later, do we want Ryan Nugent Hopkins waking up in cold sweats in the year 2035, being like, "Oh my god"?
Well, I'll tell you who I don't want waking up in nightmares is the fucking janitor who's like making nothing. And like, this is the one person in his life that is so abusive towards him. Like, why you can't invite people that are a known piece of shit into your organization. And like, that's not, you can't do that.
What if you win a Stanley Cup with him though? See, is it worth it? Because it would taint the whole thing. It would taint the whole thing like horribly. I would have to like literally like stop watching the team for like 20 games, go on like fan strike or some shit, because leave such a bad taste in my mouth.
Oh,
everyone being like, "Oh, Mike Babcock's first game as head coach of the Edmonton Oilers here at Rexall Place." That just, I can't take it, man. Yeah, he's a good coach, but like,
brutal
character. I got questions, man. And character is everything.
I mean, like he had like great players, also. You know what I mean?
That's also true.
I mean, he was. I suppose he was a great coach. He never really did shit with the Toronto Maple Leafs, as far as I can tell.
That's true. The Maple Leafs are kind of a circus, though.
Yeah, I know, but that's why he was brought in. Like, he kind of failed at his job when he was not coaching. Yeah, but
like bringing Mike Babcock in to be the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs is like when they called in like Napoleon to like put down the protesters in the streets with cannon shot. It's like the authoritarian power grab. It's like Tiananmen Square. Is that what you want, people? Everyone's talking so much about China. Can I just say one thing about the whole let's boycott China for the Olympics thing?
Okay.
Let's just point out for a second, though, at least if you're in America, a little different if you're in Canada, but if you're in America and you want to boycott China for their horrible human rights record vis-a-vis the Uyghur Muslims, I just want to remind you, your country started a war of aggression that killed like millions of Muslims and destroyed entire societies. And there's still people are fucking starving in a place like Afghanistan right fucking now because of it. So maybe we should boycott America over their human rights abuses towards the Muslim people. It's just interesting to me that anyone in North America thinks they can talk anything about treatment. It's like they put like human rights abuses against Muslims like into fashion. They like made it vogue. Is that why? Yeah. I don't get it. Anyways, Handkerchief Dynasty, the only podcast to discuss both Peter Chiarelli and human rights abuses at the same time. So yeah, Babcock is a big no-no, right? I mean, ultimately, if you're asking us, I just couldn't handle that. Well, he's a jerk.
He's a bully. He's a meanie. I don't want some
people like that don't change either.
Well, I just don't want somebody. I'd rather like, I don't think Dave Tippett is mean to people who work at Rogers Place.
Fuck no. He's probably given a lift home if they can't start their car or whatever.
And Mike Babcock is like, that's how he gets his rocks off or some weird shit. Like, I don't want that. You know, it's awful. No,
it's like the kind of guy who, like, wears his sunglasses inside.
I don't even know what the hell's going on, but like, nobody likes that guy because he's so, like, mean. And like, I don't, I'm of the opinion that like that doesn't really.
Well, yeah, people still
bridge,
say
you said it best. It's a bridge too far.
They've been rehabilitating his image. You know, people still say things like he's made a lot of those Toronto players better, et cetera, even though they might not want to admit it or whatever. It's like, dude, like there's a level, you know?
I mean, has he? Like, which ones? Like Mitch Marner?
I guess. I don't know.
Well, is he like really good now or something? Or like, isn't he just like same old Mitch Marner? Like, kind of sucks.
I kind of just ignore Toronto, to be honest, entirely as like a he's matter like, of, like, principle.
He's like Horkoff, like plus like 20.
Marner? No, Marner's so much better. Unit. Marner's way better than Horkoff. Let's not get ridiculous. Yeah, he's Horkoff
plus 20 unit points. An additional 20 unit points.
In like skating and agility and skill?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll see your Marner with plus Horkoff plus 20 agility points and raise you 35.
I just, I'm not sure like the argument that Mike Babcock made Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner much better like holds a lot of water.
Here's the question, actually. I mean, we've asked, you know, like what a fan is. What is a coach really? What does an NHL coach really do ultimately? Well, they're somewhat of a figurehead in a sense. They're kind of like the Queen of England during the height of its power. You know, they can choose to, you know, commit again heinous crimes against humanity, but usually they don't, and that's all for the best because ultimately, you know, they can't really control everything under their purview. They got a vast purview, the head coach.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they're handing out ice time.
I think they need to be. I mean, to me, the players want to impress their coach. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To me, that's how that relationship works. The coach is like very charismatic, and the players have to want to impress the coach.
So it's more of like a 9th-century Anglo-Saxon kind of liege lord and retainer kind of situation. You're all hanging out in the big hall. You want to impress him so you'll get the nice spoils, the nice lands. Yeah, totally.
Look at the career of Daryl Sutter. Mm. Look at Scotty Bowman, I think, had that same sort of like charisma to him.
Very Winterfell. I like it.
I think that's how that relationship works. So Mike Babcock, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
He's like bringing in
it's just awful. It's just awful.
Like it's like bringing in a Michael Douglas from Wall Street type character into that liege lord situation. You know, he's got like a collar that's a different color than his shirt. You know, he's just kind of talking about how greed is good, and it's not going to work out.
And it's not like the Detroit Red Wings sucked. You know what I mean? Like, they were one of the greatest teams of this generation for years.
Like Nicholas Lindstrom, Pavel Datsyuk, Henrik Zetterberg. Like, seeing those guys play hockey, it was just like bananas. They were so fucking good. Right. They dominated everyone. You watch Nick Lindstrom play a game of hockey, it was just like that guy. It's like everyone else. He was the one playing that game, and everyone else was trying to keep up with him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I'm not sure, like, Mike, like, I don't know. I think the influence of a coach can be like wildly overrated. And in Mike Babcock's case, I think that's true.
Yeah.
Because like winning cups with the Wings and then like getting Olympic medals, like, come on, man.
With Team Canada? It's not like Canada has like great players going to like the Olympics every time.
Yeah. Like you're the odds on favorite, right? You're the favorite. Yeah. So
it's like a disaster if you don't win, basically.
And I think Tippett has those things. Not, they're really like understated. He reminds me a little bit. He's almost like a combination of like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I was going to say like kind of the early Oilers coaches, like Ted Green, John Muckler, and Glenn Sather, like all compressed into one guy.
Right.
But I'm not sure if that's true.
Well, he's an interesting kind of like type of old school. He's like the old school who's like not going to make anyone like hate being there. He's not like going to be a jerk. He's creating like a good environment for everyone. Positive, constructive, communicative. And I think on that level, he succeeded. You know, for example, like a lot of coaches out there would try to be like fucking with the players on the power play and like, you know, not letting them just like do their fucking crazy dance. So I think on like certain core levels, this is my reading of the situation. I think on certain core levels, the team is appreciative of his work and he's like a solid leader. He protects his players, generally speaking. But then also on another level, you know, he probably is old school to the point where sometimes there's like a little bit of a cultural disconnect where the players maybe just don't really understand what he's trying to get through to them, or like their like value systems are like slightly different. I don't know. I wonder if like there's slight little like bits of dissonance around the corners. But again, like his contract is up at the end of the year. Do you think like a head coaching change like helps a team going into the playoffs, really? I mean, like only if they go on a crazy run, really.
No, like, I mean,
it's not
no
really
team,
a thing that happens that often.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. Like what you just said, like doesn't happen. Like a team going into the playoffs doesn't fire their coach. This idea, to be frank, to be honest, this whole idea that we were going to can Dave Tippett when the team was 5 games over .500 was insane. Insane. It was like, oh my gosh, like people came with their torches for Dave.
I mean, it is the NHL.
Like so fast. Yeah,
they really did. They really, the NHL,
not
like,
a winning record.
If it had gone to 10 games, no one would have been that surprised. But there's a little more tumult in other parts of the league than in Edmonton with the head coach position, you know? Like Philadelphia will like fire their coach at like the drop of a hat. They're just like, oh, give us a new coach. It's fine. A lot of those Eastern teams fucking like don't mind messing it up at all. How many head coaches have lost their job already this year?
I know, but I don't think any of them had a record that was above .500, at least not 5 games. Like you don't fire
my point
winning
is,
coach.
People have a little bit of a reason to obsess over it because it is a kind of a volatile thing a little bit. It's not KHL bad, but
I don't think so. I disagree.
Key takeaway though, Dave Tippett's fine. Fuck off. Don't worry about it. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous to worry about it right now.
Honestly.
Yeah. What time do we start? How long have we been going for?
I don't know. I only have 10% left on my phone though.
Okay. Well, let's start the wind down procedure so the phone can get some sleep. Okay. How are you feeling about Fogle right now? I'm really high on Fogle.
Yeah.
Had a nice long weekend being high on the Fogues.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a shooter. He's got like a boatload of shots the last couple of games. He like looks like a potential, you know, he plays at a high tempo, which I also like. I think he could be a good fit on that line.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really like the way that the Oilers were rolling their lines.
Yeah.
And I think that like the Oilers were threatening to score with that third line like often, right? Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, like ideally for me, we don't get it in, we're not in a position where our third line guys are constantly on tryouts for first line positions. Like I want to have a third line that's like getting ice time routinely and a threat to score.
Yeah.
Like I don't necessarily think we need to be throwing guys up because that's how you wind up with a weak third line, right?
Totally.
I don't know. I just thought that Seattle game, and sure, depleted teams or whatever, but it doesn't matter. Like you can tell when a team is playing very well and like they're constantly pressing, like the forecheck. The forecheck doesn't happen because the other team's depleted, right? The forecheck happens and you notice it because it's an effective forecheck. And the Oilers were doing that in both the game against Columbus and the game against Seattle. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, if Fogle is able to, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Anyone else impress you amongst this like crazy
rolling lines?
Totally. Yeah. No, I think the whole rolling lines thing, as opposed to just because I think it's just hard for them to kind of gel as a hockey team when they don't do that. Ultimately,
of course,
guys are just out of rhythm, out of sync.
McDavid and Draisaitl would be too. Like,
totally.
I think it's a crazy amount. Like, talk about squeezing the stick too much. Like, when your top guys are constantly out there in any situation you deem as like a key situation in the game,
yeah,
you're expecting them to like you know, maybe not actively expecting them, but let's face it, ultimately they're amazing. Expecting yeah. them yeah. to like weave their magic. Yeah. I don't think that's how their magic works. I think their magic works when like the lines are being rolled.
Yeah.
And it's like all of a sudden, like
there's flow. It happens. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. There has to be flow. The spice must flow and the flow must flow. So we must, we must roll those lines, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was weird. That's something I noticed that Gullitson was doing. And I noticed it like right away.
Right away. Like, yeah. Yeah. He talked about it too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I hope that continues.
Yeah. I mean, I hope, yeah, because like I hope when Tippett's back, he like integrates that knowledge, because like he's definitely like gone to the whole like, well, if we're down, just like roll Connor and everyone out, Connor and Dry out as much as possible, and like
which
fuck,
also
fuck everyone else. I mean, like, but yeah, with
it's
the flow,
understandable
we have to have
to do
the,
that.
It's understandable, sure, but it's not the way.
Yeah,
it's not the way. It's not the way. Any final admonishments, treatments, treatises, palimpsests,
not really.
Uncovered tomes of wisdom? Well, I like your hat. It becomes you.
Do you know what this hat is? Look at this hat, man. It's an Edmonton Northlands hat.
No, nice.
Yeah,
classic.
It's like, this is what the parking lot guys used to wear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Brown coats.
Yeah.
This toque. And one of those like air traffic controller things, those
like the
orange,
shiny little cone,
yeah,
like a little mini lightsaber, like a lightsaber dagger used to like direct parking traffic. That's such a brilliant little slice of Edmonton. What do you call it? Edmonton Canadiana, I guess.
Yeah,
Edmonton Anna.
So. Yeah.
I don't know, what do you call it for Edmonton itself? Well, for all you out there in Edmonton, hopefully you're not freezing your butts off. I know it's pretty cold out there. It's pretty fucking cold here too, but it's on a different scale.
Weather is the least of our concerns. It's really strange actually, because it is cold here, but nobody's talking about how cold it is. Weather's like easy now,
thank heaven for that. Yeah that's true. Manageable by most comparisons. All right, well, let's record later this week. I mean, people are going to be seeking some content and some content during the break, so we should hook it up again. If we can get the cat involved, that would be even better.
We should maybe some sort of like Christmas episode somehow.
Or Hanukkah. Is Hanukkah over?
Holiday, like a holiday episode,
generic holiday episode.
Something.
All right. We'll
play some party games.
I'll start adding ideas to the bag, no problem.
We'll play some Oilers games.
It's a Christmas miracle.
All
right. Well, everyone, stay frosty. If you're listening to this, Jesse Puljujarvi, we're cheering for you. Hopefully the Seattle hotel room that you're stuck in doesn't suck.
No, he's coming back.
Is he back? Do you get back? Okay, thank God. If you're listening to this on the plane, hopefully the buffering is not too bad and the speed connection is good. We love you, Jesse. All hail the Bison King. All right. Well, thanks for chatting, brother. I'll catch you real soon.
Okay.
And talk to you later.
Okay. See you later. Bye-bye.